What up, what up, what up, everybody? This is the Dr. Football Ultimate Patriots Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Dennis Tien, recording from my office in Dedham, Massachusetts. We're going to talk Patriots. We're going to talk NFL. It is the dog days of summer. Training camp is in full swing. The preseason is upon us. Joining me, as always, to do this, the CEO of HedgeBetter, Justin Fine. Justin, what is going on, my man? How are you?
I'm doing great. Doing great. Football's back tonight, right? Preseason getting started. And you know what? Preseason. I think we say it every year. It's like preseason's the preseason, but it's still football. And after so long, you know, of having no football, it's nice to just get something back.
Yeah, it has. I mean, it's if you're starving for content, it's something. It definitely gets tiresome fast.
No, it does. You know what? It does, but I got to tell you, man, I'll still sit there and watch a preseason football game over a lot of the other sports. And, you know, like baseball can be a little slow at times. I mean, I'll tell you what, I'm going to be watching preseason football tonight.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like it's the big Bengals Eagles. Is it Bengals Eagles is the big game tonight, I think, right?
I think so. I'd have to double check that. And then,
yeah, that's a pretty solid. That's a solid preseason match. And look, I mean, I watch preseason, but I think these games have become less meaningful. I think there was a time where they were at least okay. Obviously, they don't count for the standings, but there was a time where they were at least like a real tryout for the regular season. Yeah. And now I think that has sort of shifted to the joint practice. These preseason games are becoming less and less relevant. I know I gave away my tickets for tomorrow night for the Patriots. I really can't even be bothered to plan my weekend and delay my weekend based on going to what is really a glorified practice where we'll be lucky to see Drake May for a series or two, if even. The sooner the NFL moves to the 18-game regular season and a 2-game regular season, the better for me. Yeah. But like you said, it's all we've got right now, and it's better than nothing.
Yeah, it's better than nothing. And you know what? I think, too, especially for everyone out there that's a big fantasy player, the preseason's a really good opportunity to get your eyes on some of the lesser-known names, right? Some of the rookies, some of the second- and third-string guys. Guys that you might want to take a flyer on later in your draft that have an opportunity to play and showcase themselves. Like, you know, I think you can find some value in it.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the biggest value is like who's going to get hurt. It's almost like a negative. Like you watch to see does anyone get hurt. You know, there was one game so far. Did you watch the Chargers Lions game, the Hall of Fame game?
I did. Yeah.
That was probably the best Hall of Fame game I think they've ever had. Because that game, of all the sucky preseason games, that game is the suckiest of the sucky. It's literally a glorified practice. But that was actually, I thought that was interesting to see how well Trey Lance, I didn't even think he had that in him.
No, he did. Yeah, Trey Lance looked surprisingly good, granted, against mostly like second string guys. But he looked pretty good. And you know what? I don't think it's any coincidence either that you got those two coaches in their two teams, respectively, in you go out and you actually get a decent product because you know Harbaugh isn't letting his guys slide with any laziness and what's his name? Oh my God, I'm drawing a blank. Dan Campbell. You know, Dan Campbell's lighting a fire under his guys' butts. And so, you know, you get two coaches that are always demanding the best out of their team, whether it's a preseason game or practice or whatnot, and you got a pretty good product out of it.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at the way like Trey Lance looked in command and the way he threw the ball accurately. Like, honestly, I didn't even think he was capable of even that. So, you know, he's kind of in a dead end street there in the Chargers because they have Justin Herbert. But I think it's one of those things where like if he was on probably 10 or 15 teams in the league and he looked like he did in that game, people would be like starting to like question, you know, should this guy be if this guy was on Cleveland or Indianapolis or, you know, the Giants or, you know, you can make a whole list of them, you know, he'd be starting to get a little buzz and run around him as a starter.
Oh, exactly. Let's not forget too that like Trey Lance, I believe, is like still only 24 years old. Like he's younger than a bunch of like rookie quarterbacks. And he came out after what, 1 year was it San Diego State or something like that? So like the guy virtually came to the NFL with no experience, at a really young age. So like I'm not shocked that as he gets older and gets more experience, he's getting better. Like there was clearly some raw ability there that made him stick out to the 49ers. But yeah, I think maybe he's hopefully developing a little bit more.
I thought it was too a sign that how you know Harbaugh is a good coach because obviously this guy needs to play. You have to play for him to develop. So, you know, for him to play, he played almost the first three quarters of that game. And I think they should continue to play him and see if he continues to develop. All right, Justin, let's get into what's going on in Foxborough so far. By all accounts, it has been a successful camp. Patriots had joint practice with the Commanders this week, preseason game tomorrow night in Foxborough. Not sure what we're going to see in that one. Overall, you know, I like what I am seeing from this team in training camp so far. I think Vrabel is running a professional camp. It is not a hard camp from what all reports. This is not Mayo ran a hard camp last year and it was a waste of energy. Vrabel is running a professional camp. I think as a player, he knows that it is a long season and it is a little bit about minimizing wear and tear, but he's running a tight ship and it seems like all the vibe, all the reporting for the most part has generally been a much improved operation this August.
Yeah, they seem like they're practicing with a purpose. And like you said, I think Vrabel, just with his background as being both an established coach and a successful player, he knows how to strike that right balance between, you know, how hard to go, how intense to go, while still keeping things like professional and productive, you know?
100%. What do you think of him mixing it up in the scrum yesterday against the Commanders?
I love it. I love it because you know what? You talk about all the time, whether it's a team or, you know, the coach of a team or the CEO of a company, it doesn't really matter. You set the tone at the top, right? And they've talked about wanting this team to be a tough, physical, resilient team. I know it's almost like a little childish to say, but like what better way than to see your head coach out there getting in the middle of the scrap, like getting physical?
I don't know. Like I get it. It felt a little forced to me, like, oh, scrap, let me run in and show him one of the guys. I don't know. It just kind of was like playing to the masses a little bit. I don't know.
So I almost think it was like instinct. Like I know what you're saying. Like when you say like you think it feels a little forced, but like
it's almost too predictable, you know?
Right. But like I literally don't even think he thought twice. Like I think like his reactions and his instinct took over and he just ran out there and got in the middle of it. Like I think that's just who he is.
Yeah. Well, I mean that may well be the case, but people are really like running with this right now. Like the Patriots Nation is like really just full state of excitement over the fact that Vrabel like jumped into this scrum and somehow emerged with like a black eye or a cut on his eye. Like it's like becoming part of the legend of Vrabel. Like he caught 8 touchdowns in the Super Bowls. And oh, by the way, he got in a scrum in Foxborough and got cut in his eye.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what? Did you hear some of the players talking about it after? I gotta say they seem pretty amped up about it, you know, and maybe
they took the cheese, it seems like.
Exactly. And you know what, I get, look, whether it's forced, whether it's, you know, planned, that who knows, but if it's working and it's having a positive effect on the players, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I bet you. I wouldn't be surprised if Vrabel like paid off someone on Washington, like, hey, start this fight for me so I can show I'm really one of the guys.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah,
I'm obviously kidding about that, but it just felt a little much. But you know what, it is definitely going to be part of the story of this team and the story of this camp so far, is that Vrabel kind of showing that he does have that rapport with his players and players feel like, you know, he is a part of the team, really.
Yeah, and I mean, look, this has been going back kind of to day one when he stepped in the building, and it was like he's one of the first people and one of the only coaches you see, I feel like, that is getting in the middle of it with this team in practice. Like he's getting physical with this lineman. Yeah. Like he's involving himself. Like he's taking part in drills and stuff like that. Like I feel like that's just kind of like who he is. Like he wants to be involved and he wants to, you know, take charge and lead from the front.
Yeah, but I mean, on the side of the coin, you know, the doctor in me can't help but be like, this guy's like what, like 50 something years old? I think rips cigarettes all day and night, is what they say. Like, dude, you're getting to that age, man. Don't be getting, you know, we don't want you keeling over either, Vrabel. Right. You got a job to do here.
That, you know what? That's 49 funny. Years old. I didn't know he was a chain smoker. That's
Supposedly he's a big smoker. I have no personal knowledge of this, but that's the reporting around him is that he's a big smoker.
Interesting. All right. Well, hey.
Yeah. He's got a little Marlboro Man situation going on there to him, apparently. Okay. All right. Let's talk. I'll tell you what I did like about the practice yesterday is the reporting around Drake May. Apparently, by all accounts, May looked really good enjoying practices. I think he was graded somewhere around 15 for 21, couple touchdowns. Generally looked in command, generally pushed the ball down the field well. I might point out, with really his best receiver really not being a part of any of that, it feels like Drake May is having a pretty good training camp so far, Justin.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I know, you know, you can never read too much into the preseason and in the camps, but this is exactly what we wanted to see, right? We said he's got new weapons. He's got an upgraded offensive line. He's got a new head coach. He's got an offensive coordinator that I think if we all could have handpicked someone, you know, a lot of us would have picked Josh McDaniels. Like, I think we all expected to see him take a step forward. So I'm glad that we're having the conversation that he looks like he's taking a step forward instead of like what I feel like we've been used to in the past with our prior quarterbacks post Tom Brady, which is, there's a lot left to be desired, and we're not really seeing what we expected to.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're all hoping he makes that big two-year leap. And I've said every year we've recorded in training camp, I'll say the same thing. Like, take stock of the buzz around people, players in training camp, in the preseason. It's not the be-all and end-all. It's not the final word, but it counts. And you can go back, no better example than what's happened right in Foxborough the last couple of years, where, like, right from the get-go, the Patricia Judge thing was a disaster. It was reported as a disaster. Right. It looked like a disaster. Mac Jones looked like a disaster. You can look at the Cam Newton year as an example, that he can't throw the ball. You could look at last year in the Mayo camp, and it looked like a disaster. So everything, just, you know, that buzz you get from these practices, it is important. I really believe that.
Totally. And so far, so good for the most part.
Very, very good for Drake May. What about this backup quarterback position, Justin? You know, one of the things I'm looking at is some of these over under totals on Drake May on DraftKings and some of the sports props, and they're all really low. And the only way I can make sense of any of that is the concern around the injuries for him, and maybe the belief in Vegas that this guy isn't going to play 17 games, like a 3,250 passing yards, 19 and a half touchdowns. It feels like those are locks if Drake May plays 17 games, even with a bad team around him. But I don't think they think he's going to play 17 games, is I guess my point is. So what about this backup position? They pushed Joe Milton out the door. Yeah. They're rolling with Josh Dobbs, who has a great nickname. I can't remember what it is right now. I'm going to look it up in a second. They don't really have a third quarterback on this roster. Now that we're in training camp, are we giving new context to the Joe Milton trade and the backup quarterback situation on this roster?
Well, you know, I guess it's one of those things where it's like, you know, you hate to operate under the assumption that your quarterback is going to get hurt, right? And I do like Josh Dobbs. I don't like Josh Dobbs for 10 games. You know, I like him, you know, for a spot start here and there if needed. One thing
else. His name is the Pastronaut, by the way. The Pastronaut. Because he worked for NASA.
Yeah, love that. From everything you hear about Josh Dobbs, he's a true professional. Extremely intelligent guy. He's capable of playing the backup role.
He's had moments. Like, he's won games. Yeah. You know?
He has. And so I'm glad he's there. Don't get me wrong. Another thing I'll say though is, you know, I get it. Maybe they're alluding to an injury, but I really do think there's still a lot of people who haven't come around to the fact that this Patriots team should be a much improved team. Like, I still hear some people talking about the Patriots. You know, I was listening to a podcast the other day and they were talking about the 8.5 win total, and they were acting like they couldn't fathom why Vegas set the win total at 8.5. And I feel like there's still, largely outside of New England, somewhat of a lagging view as to this team's progress and the step forward that they've taken.
I'm going to play their side a little bit. And you know that I predicted this team for the over. I took the over. I've already put that wager in on DraftKings. I like the over at 8.5. But let's be honest. This is a team coming off back-to-back four-win seasons. They could double their win total this year and still hit the under on that, just to kind of play the other side of that. And, you know, you look at this roster. We're going to go through it a little bit in this episode of the podcast, but there are still holes and questions at pretty much every spot, and not small ones. There are some big questions throughout this roster. So do I think they're going to win 10 or 11 games? Yes, I do, because I believe in Vrabel. Yep. I believe in Drake May. And I think this team may be better than what they've shown the last 2 years, because there's been a lot of BS here.
Right.
All that said, I couldn't blame anyone for being skeptical of them when they're coming off back-to-back four-win seasons.
Look, I get it. I get it. And you know what? We talked about, I think, last year and at the end of last year, how desperate this team was to fill a lot of holes and how many gaps they truly had. And, you know, Rome obviously wasn't built in a day. And, you know, a true, true rebuild and turnaround of a franchise typically takes longer than one offseason. But, I mean, I feel like this team did a really, really good job to improve and plug as many holes as they could from last season. Has it been perfect? No, but I mean, I look at this team completely different in terms of talent and expectations than I did the last few years.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, like I said, my perspective, and we're going to see if this is true, is that this team wasn't really as bad as you think it is in the first place. Like, I blame 2023 on Mac Jones decompensating. I don't think this was a four-win team. I think it was a combination of Mac Jones decompensating, yep, and Bill Belichick, I don't know, being way past his prime and just needing a whole new change of scenery in that locker room. And it rotted that team from the inside out. I think they had way better talent than four wins in 2023. In 2024, I'm sorry, Gerard Mayo was the worst coach in the NFL in the last 20 years, if not 30 years, if not that I can ever remember. He had no business being an NFL head coach. I think this team was way better than a four-win team. I think if they had started Drake May from the beginning and had a competent coach, they would have been a six or seven-win team last year. So I agree with you. Like, there is more talent on this roster than people give it credit for.
Totally, totally. And I mean, no, just to add to that, you know, you talk about Gerard Mayo, but no coincidence too that Covington and Van Pelt are out, right? It's a total overhaul, not only total in terms overhaul of what they did to the roster, but the coaching staff as well. And I think that, you know what, it really does make a big difference. Like, Covington and Van Pelt were not up to snuff. Gerard Mayo was not up to snuff, and it trickled down throughout the entire team in the offense and the defense.
100%. And, you know, just to like make the point about what you just said too, like, you know, Van Pelt and Covington, they both have taken jobs for other NFL franchises. I think Van Pelt is going to be like a offensive assistant for the Rams with McVay.
Yeah.
And of all those guys, Van Pelt, we both agreed he did the best job last year. Like, he was the best of them. You know, I think Covington is going to be a linebackers coach somewhere. What's Gerard Mayo doing this year? What's he doing? He's not coaching.
Yeah.
No one hired him to do anything.
Yeah.
And yet he was somehow the man at the top. And yes, a lot of times coaches will take a year off after they get fired. A lot of coaches have done that. But this is a guy that I think was really under the microscope. There were a lot of questions about if he was even competent to be in the job. If I'm Gerard Mayo, I want to take another job somewhere and prove that I belong. And he didn't do that. So no. I think that says a lot about what his abilities are as a coach and what his intention, what's in his heart, where his passions really are.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Totally. I mean, and we said it too, you know, I think it's partially an ego play with Gerard Mayo. I don't think he's willing to accept the fact that he was as bad as he was last year.
Maybe that's true, but you know, usually these guys when they get fired, yeah, okay, they may take a demotion. They don't go from head coach to head coaching job, but they end up somewhere doing something,
right?
You know, and Mayo is just like floating out there in space. I just think it says a lot. I really do. All right, let's talk about some of the positions on this team, Justin. Let's talk about running backs. I'm just going to give you a couple takes. I'm not going to go like spot by spot because that's just boring. But I will say, I said from the beginning of camp that I thought Ramondre Stevenson might be a surprise cut this year. And the reason for that is threefold. One is he's not that good. Get over it, Patriots fans. He's an average back. Pretty much every team in the NFL has Ramondre Stevenson on the roster. We're going to stop thinking about this guy like he's Walter Payton. Number two is he's the third best back on this roster, in my opinion. I think Gibson was better than him last year. I think Henderson is better than him as a rookie. And I would also say that he hasn't been the best back on this roster since 2021 because Ezekiel Elliott was better than him too. And then he fumbles. And he's got a high cap number. So you add all four of those things up, and I think this guy is a target to be a cut at training camp.
Yeah, well, I mean, he fumbled in the scrimmage the other night, right? And it's like, you know, if that's a sign for things to come, right. it's like, well, this guy clearly is still going to carry over those same problems. I think Antonio Gibson's super interesting to point out because let's not forget how kind of highly touted and the expectations for him when he came into the league. And he got the injury bug. He had some toe problems, I think, you know, back-to-back seasons. He got banged up a couple times, but by all accounts, he was supposed to be a really good back. And I do actually think he's probably better than Ramondre Stevenson. I love Travion Henderson. I think it's only a matter of time before Travion Henderson is taking over that starting role. And if he can prove that he's got the power in the stamina, I wouldn't be shocked to see him slide into a quasi three down back role at some point, especially if they get rid of Ramondre.
100%. And I think the only thing that might save Ramondre is the fact that one, they do have a ton of cap room, and two, it doesn't feel like anyone's really emerged so far in that third back role. And that might be something interesting to watch in these three preseason games. You take a guy like Lan Larrison or Jermichael Hasty or some of these other guys, if they look really good, you know, I mean, I'm sorry, like watch out Ramondre Stevenson.
Yeah. And you know what? I feel like Vrabel, he's probably going to have a quick leash with them. If he comes out in the first couple of games and has a fumble or two, I wouldn't be surprised to see him hit the bench. Yeah. I mean, I don't think
he's 1,000%. Yeah. Vrabel will not tolerate the fumbling like Gerard Mayo did. If Vrabel will not, and his fumbling was, he fumbled 8 times last year.
Yeah.
That is just you don't hear that very often. Usually a guy gets benched way before they even have the chance to fumble 8 times.
Right. Right. So, yeah, I'm totally with you. I wouldn't miss Ramondre Stevenson if they got rid of him. And I just don't think he's as talented as especially as Travion. And if Gibson can be healthy, I would rather give Gibson some work.
100%. I'd give the ball to Gibson before Stevenson any time, any game right now at this point. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's talk about the wide receivers, Justin. Here's my take home from this group. Number one is, There is going to be a tough cut. There has to be a tough cut. If you do the numbers, they either have to cut Baker, Polk, Kendrick Bourne. They can roll with 6. 2 of those guys are getting cut. If they roll with 7, one of them is getting cut. It's somewhere they're cutting a draft pick or someone from next year. The one caveat to that, and I'm going to throw another name out there for a surprise cut that I don't think anyone's expecting, and maybe it's a little crazy because they just gave him a contract. Why is Mac Hollins a guarantee to make this team? Yes, they signed him. It was a 2-year, $8 million contract. It's not like they paid this guy a huge contract. By all accounts, both Baker and Polk are having good camps. Bourne is more of a proven veteran in the passing game. I'm wondering if Hollins is one of these one and done camp cut type things.
I'm glad you said that because I've never really understood the hype around Mac Hollins. I don't think like he's ever really been that good. I didn't really love him as a signing. I totally wouldn't be upset if they got rid of him. I mean, he is, I think, their biggest receiver, so to speak. But I mean, Kayshawn Booty's got some size to him. You know, I think they have other guys that can fill that role. I wouldn't be surprised to see Mac Hollins get cut. And another name that, you know, I think is probably at the bottom of this depth chart right now, but I would really like to see him get a chance, even if they can carve out a role for him on special teams, is this Efton Chisholm kid. Because I think he's someone, he reminds me of like an Edelman, like a Welker. You know, he went in, he broke all of Cooper Kupp's records. I believe it was Eastern Washington. He looks really crisp and really good when I see clips of him, from practice and in training camp. Like, he's a guy that I'd like to see get a chance. So, I mean, you got to cut somebody.
This is another position where, look, if you're the preseason is really important, I think, because the guys that show out in these games are going to win these roster spots. And, you know, if Efton Chisholm comes out and catches 3 touchdowns in the preseason and Jalen Polk doesn't catch a ball and drops 3 passes, Mike Vrabel is going to have zero reservation about cutting Jalen Polk. Vrabel has shown he has no allegiance to the past. I mean, look at what he did when he came in here. He got rid of David Andrews. He got rid of a couple other of the kind of vested veterans. Look, I mean, he'll have no problems about cutting Baker, Polk, or really anyone else, I think. So, these preseason games are super important for this wide receiver group.
Totally, totally. I'd kind of hope they roll with 7 instead of 6, just because I think, like, you know, I think it's important to have depth there. You know, you don't really have a superstar to speak of like Stephon Diggs. You know, I'm sure he's going to be fine, but I don't think he's going to be the Stephon Diggs of old. Like, when you don't have that superstar, I think the depth is important. I think between Baker, Polk, and Chisholm, you know, I just think, I don't know. I'd rather see more of those guys get a chance than not.
100%. All right, let's look at this tight end group. I don't think there's much to say about this. Henry and Hooper, I think, are locks. There's 4 or 5 young guys. I don't know if one of them makes this roster or not. Usually teams do carry a third tight end. There's no real clear third guy, so it's kind of a training camp battle type thing.
Yeah, do they still have the Jaheim Bell kid?
They still have Jaheim Bell.
I'd like to see him get a chance. He kind of reminds me a little, you know, if you go back to Vrabel's days in Tennessee and how versatile Jonnu Smith was. I mean, Vrabel pretty much brought Jonnu Smith to the forefront, right? And he used him. He lined him up out wide. He lined him up in the backfield. He was really, really tactful with him. And I think Jaheim Bell he could kind of play a similar role. He's an athletic kid. I think he could line him up at different positions. He didn't really get a chance last year.
He's a small guy. And I feel like from that third bottom of the roster, tight end guy, you need that like big blocking kind of burly tight end to bring in a run formations.
True, true. I mean, well, who's in what? Hooper? Is it Hooper? That's their number 2 right now.
Yep, Hooper and Henry. We're kind of all around. Yeah. They're kind of pass catchers too.
Yeah.
You know, you need a 6'6", 260 guy to put in on 3rd and 1, you know?
Right, right.
All right, let's go to this offensive line group. This is an interesting group. I mean, this is another group where the preseason's going to matter. And you look again, there's going to be tough cuts. You know, you're looking at the some of the projections I've seen have both Laydon Robinson, Sidy Sow, and Vidarian Lowe all cut, as well as Cole Strange cut. So I think all those guys are fighting for a roster spot. My take for this, and you know, you might not agree with this, Vidarian Lowe, I think, has to be on this team, because as much as we give him a hard time, and he's probably not a starting tackle in this league, I feel like he did get better last year as the year went on. He has experience. You still have a lot of questions with your starting tackles. I don't think you can cut a guy with that kind of NFL experience, even if you know he's a C- or D+. That might be their best option.
Well, I mean, yeah, you know, to your point, your 2 starting tackles right now are a rookie and a 36-year-old, right?
Right.
So you need some depth at that position. I would be in favor of keeping him around, because yeah, I mean, you really never know what could happen, and tackle is such an important position, especially for a young quarterback.
Exactly. I mean, it's, and they should have brought in another player at tackle. They should have brought in another veteran. You know, Morgan Moses has not had a good camp. He has not barely been on the field. When he has been out there, I guess he has not looked well. So, I mean, I think if you look at all the positions on this team, and the one I'm most concerned about right now, it is 100% still tackle.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's totally fair. I think part of it too, you know, when you talk about some of those cuts, I think it depends on how well Jared Wilson holds up at guard, right? I mean, yeah, I don't think
he's a find.
Yeah,
he's a find.
He was definitely a find. I think we all kind of said when they got him in the draft last year that, you know, they kind of stole him. And, you know, obviously he got drafted as a center, but if he can show the talent and the versatility to to step into that guard role, and then you can keep Bradberry at center. I'm in favor of that because Wilson seems like he's got a lot of raw talent and athleticism that could be utilized.
100%, and he can play two positions too, which is invaluable. You know, he's going to be able to play both center and guard, which is going to be huge. You know, I like Campbell at tackle. I think it's crazy that people are judging Will Campbell already. I do have a take on Will Campbell, and that is he could have a terrible preseason. He could have a terrible first 4 or 6 weeks of the season. He could have a terrible whole season and still be a really good left tackle in the NFL. He is a rookie, and not every rookie hits the ground running perfectly. Now, the reporting from the scrimmage yesterday was that he actually had a good scrimmage against live action, which is encouraging. But don't overreact. We can't overreact to this early reports. Like, he may have a bad year and still be a good tackle. What's dangling over him is this stupid arm length thing. And everyone's willing to just pounce on that and be like, see, he can't play. He can't play tackle. Terrible pick. What are they doing? And it's like, just pause, pump the brakes, and give this player a year before you judge him.
Totally. And another layer that I'll add to that is a lot of times, you know, since they've gotten to camp and started practicing, he's been lined up against Keon White. And I think Keon White is sneakily a superstar in the making. I think he's one of the most underrated players in that defense. And he's someone that I could see taking a big jump forward this year to becoming not only a great defensive end, but potentially a superstar. So if we look back at the end of this year and we're looking at Keon White, like, you know, holy hell, what a great find. Look at the jump he made. And then, you know, you piece that back to camp when he was given, what's his name? A little bit of a hard time. Maybe it starts to make a little bit more sense.
Yeah, well, look, I'm no like Dante Scarnecchia, okay? But I would think that if it's a one-on-one drill and between a tackle and a defensive end, the defensive end probably has a huge advantage, right?
Right.
So like, so much of the reason people are judging Campbell is because he's gotten beat in these one-on-one drills. And it's like, what is the frame of reference? Like, what is the basis for this? Like, you're out there on an island by yourself against someone that can go any way on you. Like, that sounds like it would be really hard to do. I don't think we can judge, you know, anyone based on how they do in a drill. Can we at least have like a preseason game before we even begin to like question if this pick was a bad idea or not?
Yeah, no, totally. I want to see Campbell, you know, get a full preseason under his belt, get a couple games out of his belt and see him, you know, start to progress. I mean, look, I don't care how good you are coming out of college. I don't care what position you play.
Right.
You're in the NFL now. And that's a big jump. And so I think all rookies need a little bit of leeway in terms of their progression and their development.
100%. All right, let's go to the defensive line. I don't really have a take on this. You know, I think that except to say that a lot of the roster projections I've seen have them keeping 10. If you wanted to keep an extra wide receiver or an extra lineman, I think this would be the place you'd cut back. But I do think the only take home, I would say, a much improved group, Milton Williams, Christian Barmore, Keon White, Harold Landry. That's a pretty solid starter. I like Calavion Chase on as well. Anthony Jennings, I think, is a solid little player. So I think this is a solid group.
I mean, I would argue that their defensive line is the deepest position on this team right now, right?
And yeah, maybe.
And it's probably the position group that I have the most confidence in. I love those guys. And I'll tell you what, if Barmore and Williams can stay healthy, I mean, that might be the best interior D line in football.
At least in the AFC.
At least, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, let's look at this linebacker group. I went to training camp. I don't know if you saw the pictures on Facebook, but
yeah,
we had a great day. And we went on the day. It was like 100 degrees out, so no one was there. So we got to meet like a ton of the players. And let me just tell you something. Robert Spillane, okay, that guy looks like he came from a horror movie.
Yeah.
Okay. He looks like Quasimodo. Right? That guy is like you want to talk about a dude that looks like his job. This guy looks like a linebacker. Acts like a linebacker, sounds like a linebacker. And I honestly think I may see this guy in my nightmares because he just looks like he is just like a physical, imposing presence. All right. Not kidding at all. But, you know, clearly I think he really stabilizes this whole group. You know, I think their linebackers are okay. I don't discredit Jelani Tavai. I mean, he's a decent player. Like, yeah, he opened his mouth at the end of last year. A lot of people don't like him, but I think he's on this roster. And I like Christian Ellis. I thought that was a great signing.
Yeah, I mean, Robert Spillane, I don't know if I've ever seen a thicker neck. I mean, that guy, like, his neck just goes right into his head. Like, there is, it is almost freakish when you look at him. But I think you're 100% right. Like, I mean, I don't love the linebacking core, but I think they're good enough. And I think with the talent you potentially have in the secondary and the defensive line, I think they can definitely, you know, hold their own.
I do. I would say that, you know, Marty Mapu is someone that's on the bubble. To me, if I'm looking for like players that might have been silver lining a little bit to the 2024 season, I thought he was one of them.
Yeah.
So I would hate to see them give up on him. I hope they can find a spot for him. And I think in today's game, a faster, smaller linebacker like him, hybrid safety, that's sort of the trend right now.
Yeah.
So I would like to see Mapu on this roster.
Yeah, I would too. I think we both said last year, you know, getting to see him play, because I believe was last year his second year? Because it didn't.
Yes,
I think he got injured. Year, he got injured his rookie year. Right?
Yeah, last year was his second year. Yeah, he was a Belichick pick.
Right. And so I liked what I saw from him, and I'd like to see more. And like you said, I think having a guy who can play that hybrid role is important.
Yep. And then it is important. And speed is what the whole game is about. So the whole, like, at training camp, I met Ted Johnson, for example,
that.
Oh, he's a big boy. He still is a big boy. Yeah, like, he looks like, I mean, you know.
He looks like the Hulk, honestly,
he really does. Like, he's a very imposing presence, would be the term. But, you know, a guy like him, where's his role in today's NFL? He might be a fringe player, you know, a role player. He's not a star. Like, he kind of was a star when he was here, at least when he first got here. So, you know, Marty Mapu is what the NFL linebacking position is trending towards, players like that.
Yeah, totally.
Cornerback room might be a strength to the team. I love Marcus Jones as a slot corner. I really think if he stays healthy, he's a solid number three slot corner. It really comes down to Gonzalez and Davis. Gonzalez is hurt. I think he'll be okay. I'm a little worried about Carlton Davis. It feels like there's something weird going on with that guy, like all this non-football injury stuff. Hasn't really been on the field much. They're calling it kind of like a load management thing. Fine. You know, there's not a lot of depth for in this group. If one of these guys goes down, that's probably my only concern about this group.
Agreed. Yeah, I think they're a little bit thin. I like Carlton Davis as a number two cornerback. If something were to happen to Christian Gonzalez, I don't have any faith that he can step in and be a number one shutdown guy. I think it does largely depend on the health. And you know what? Look, like, we talk about it all the time. The secondary's job will get a lot easier if that front seven can apply pressure, right? And it looks, you know, by all accounts, I'm expecting this front seven to be able to get to the quarterback and apply pressure. So, you know, hopefully that'll make things a little bit more manageable for those guys back there.
I mean, you look at a Gonzalez Davis as like a cornerback pairing, that's as good as any in the NFL.
Right. Totally. And to your point, though, it is a little scary that both of them have some health concerns right now. You know, that typically doesn't bode well for, you know, a 17-game season.
The one thing I think you have going for us, though, is that Christian Gonzalez, he is in, like, basically, he's not in a contract year, but he's a third-year player. And a lot of times, guys in his position, guys that have shown that they're, you know, Pro Bowl caliber guys in their third year, that's when they sign the big contract. So if Christian Gonzalez wants that big contract, he's going to have to get on the field.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, the past injury, you know, history, again, combined with this right now, with, I believe it's the hamstring? Is it?
Hamstring,
the hamstring, yeah. I mean, again, it does worry me a little bit, but if he's able to stay healthy, I'm confident in his skills and his ability.
Yeah, and I can proudly report from training camp that his hamstring looked good. He was moving, he was walking, looked nice, looked like a nice, tight, healthy, functional hamstring on Christian Gonzalez.
Good, all right.
All right, let's go to the safeties. Again, position of strength, one of the stories of camp, Craig Woodson has looked really good. Mm. Kyle Duggar needs to watch out. Kyle Duggar is another guy that could be a surprise cut. Had a terrible year last year. Again, has had a terrible camp by all accounts this year. I would watch out. I wouldn't be surprised at all if they moved on from Duggar.
And by his own admission, he came out the other day and said that he needs to step up and be better. So, you know, yeah, I totally agree. I do like some of the younger guys. They got, like you said, Craig Woodson. His sounded like he looks pretty good. But you know what? Again, I think it all really comes down to health, right? In that secondary. And yeah, I'm confident that Duggar can be a good player because we've seen him at times be a really good safety, right? I feel like it's more so the consistency with him than it is his ability.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, he has flashed at times. I mean, I thought in 2023, he was really good.
Right.
He didn't have a good year last year. He was supposedly hurt the whole year. But, you know, I mean, he's someone, they signed him to a big contract. He has a reasonable cap number. I mean, if he can't produce, he's someone that I think could be on the waiver wire.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
how about that for your last couple of drafts, Bill Belichick? If Cole Strange and Kyle Duggar both get cut in the same camp.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know what? It's tough, but look, I think Vrabel has shown that he's not afraid to move on from these guys. So you know what? I trust Vrabel's decision making at this point. Like if he gets rid of these guys, I'm not going to be sitting here boohooing about it.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. I mean, look, both these guys. I mean, especially Cole Strange. I feel like he's had ample opportunity to show he belongs in the league. This was a very questionable. Both of these were very questionable picks from the second they were made. Like you go back to the media coverage around both those drafts, people questioned these picks. People weren't happy about these picks. They traded back into the second round to get Kyle Duggar. People were confused. He went to a small school. Ditto Cole Strange, the same exact story, right? And it's like now 3, 4, 5 years later, we're sitting here and both these guys are on the verge of you know, being bounced off the roster. It's like, oh man, what an epically bad run of drafts they're on. Yeah. And Justin, let's wrap it up with, I think, a part of camp that is not getting talked about enough, which is who the hell is going to kick the ball for this team?
Yeah.
They got a major problem.
Well, so what? And I haven't heard as much about this, but the Andre Borealis guy?
He was the draft pick, right?
Right, right. I mean,
and then they got this Parker Romo guy.
Parker Romo. I think it was last week they brought in a bunch of kickers to work out for them. I mean, you don't love that after you just spent draft capital on a kicker, right? I mean,
and the whole spending draft capital thing, I mean, that's been hit or miss over the years for them. Like, yeah, they hit on Gostkowski. They missed horribly on that Justin Rorschacher guy a few years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I always think rookie kickers are a total crapshoot. I don't like drafting kickers. I think, you know, a good stable veteran is a dime a dozen. There's a bunch of those guys out there. I never really understand spending the draft capital on a rookie that's unproven, especially where it's such a mental game, the kicker, right? Like it's less about your physical abilities and it really comes down to your mental capabilities. Cause you know, a lot of those guys, we've seen a bunch of guys that either have booming legs or a bunch of talent, you know, that on the practice field can go out there and look great. But when it comes down to a game and you know, you the game's on the line and, or, you know, you're really in a tight spot and those guys go out there and they just whiff because the pressure gets them. I mean, you know, I think it says a lot. I mean, look no further than
what they did with Nick Folk a couple years ago.
Exactly.
They just picked him up, plucked him off the waiver wire, and he was arguably their best offensive player for two seasons.
Yes. And that's exactly
those guys are out there.
Yeah, they're totally out there.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, when you draft a kicker with any draft pick, you're expecting him to come in and be able to do the job. So the fact that this question isn't answered yet, I mean, this is another thing that I think that if you're looking, why do I need to watch these three preseason games? This is one of the big reasons why, like who is going to kick the ball and how do they do? Like if you fold under the pressure of the week two in the preseason against the Panthers then or the Vikings, whoever the hell they got, then watch out in like week 12 on Monday night against the Giants when you're fighting for a playoff spot.
Totally.
All right, man. Anything else on this training camp situation? We're going to talk about a few things around the league before we wrap it up.
No, I would just go back to what we were saying at the beginning with Vrabel, and it seems like he's getting a positive response out of the players. The players seem energized. I think the players seem motivated, and you know, it sounds like by all accounts, they really like playing for the guy. And I think that's really, really big, especially when you got a lot of unproven guys on the roster.
Yeah. I mean, look, Vrabel is no, let's not pretend that Mike Vrabel is like Jim Harbaugh or, you know, he has a lot to prove as a head coach, or he has something to prove as a head coach. He didn't win in the postseason. He never won a Super Bowl. He certainly rebuilt that Tennessee program. You know, he did a lot given the fact that he didn't have a real quarterback. Look what he got out of Ryan Tannehill. Exactly. That's probably the best case you can make for Mike Vrabel, that he was able to be competitive, make the playoffs, win playoff games with Ryan Tannehill as his quarterback. All that said, we're not bringing in, you know, a two-time Super Bowl championship either. So we know Vrabel is a competent coach. We know he belongs, which we couldn't say that about Mayo. But I think that's all we can say about him right now. I think there's questions for him too.
Agreed.
Like him. Don't get me wrong. I was thrilled they hired him, but
I agree with you. I like him. I feel good about him, but it's still a lot of speculation. Like you said, like he doesn't have some of the accolades and accomplishments that can solidify it. But you know what? I'll tell you this. I think even with just this team that he has this year, and we've talked about it, you know, you got a lot of young guys, you still have some holes that you need to fill, but I think he's in a much better position with this team than he ever was in Tennessee, to be completely honest.
Well, it feels like Drake May is a better quarterback than Ryan, or has a higher ceiling than Ryan Tannehill did.
Right. Right.
So he's got that going for him.
Totally. And I mean, look, like I, not for nothing, but you know, remember that season, you know, he beats the Patriots. He beats the Ravens and Lamar Jackson. Yep. I mean, he takes a 2-score lead in the AFC Championship against the Chiefs and, you know, and Patrick Mahomes. So it's like, you know, he's shown that he can get the best out of his players in big games and big moments. But he never really had the talent, I think, to cross the finish line. And, you know, I don't think we're calling this Patriots team a Super Bowl caliber team just yet, but I do think he's got enough talent to take that next step.
I mean, if you were arguing against him, you would have to point to how things ended in Tennessee. And those last, I think, 2 years or so in Tennessee, they really weren't very good.
True, but I would also say, you know, he was dealing with, what was his quarterback situation, right? Did he have Will Levis's rookie year? And I forget who it was the year before that. But I mean, I don't think he's had much to work with.
So just to go through it. So he started in 2018. He was 9-7 in 18, 9-7 in 19, 11-5 in 20, 12-5 in 21. The 19 year, he lost to the Chiefs in the playoffs. That was the year he beat the Pats. Yep. He lost in the wild card in 20. He lost in the divisional round. So he won a playoff game in 21, and then those last 2 years, 7-10, 6-11, and that's really where it kind of fell apart.
Right. And look, I'm glad it did, because if he kept being successful in Tennessee, he definitely wouldn't be here. I don't think the Titans would have let him go, and I think he was the right person to step into this job. So yeah, I'm
great. He did what he did. I said it before, but he did what he did with Ryan Tannehill. But I'm another guy I don't love. You might like him, Arthur Smith.
I hate Arthur Smith's offense. Arthur Smith is antiquated,
right? It's an antiquated approach. So you know, like, I don't know, is Josh McDaniels an upgrade? Is Drake May an upgrade? I would say it feels like it. Yes, time will tell.
Right,
but you know, I mean, if you give Vrabel a quarterback that's a top 10 quarterback, you know, everything he did in Tennessee, he did with a guy that was like a below average quarterback.
Totally. And I think that's feeding into my expectations, right? I think it's just, you got upgrades all around on this roster.
All right, let's talk about some stuff around the league. Just a couple quick things I want to bring up before we wrap it up. Number one is, and this is going to tie a little bit into New England, I think the two big stories around the league is the holdouts of Terry McLaurin in Washington and Micah Parsons in Dallas. So let me just say right off the bat, before we even talk about this, any chance either of these two guys end up in New England?
I'm going to say no. I think they both wind up signing back with their respective teams. I think you got a little bit of a chess match going on. And I also just want to say too, I'm not a big fan of bringing either of those guys in. I know they're talented. I respect them, but I don't want to give a big contract, a giant contract to a 31-year-old Terry McLaurin.
Yep.
In the draft capital that they're talking about having to give up for Micah Parsons, I mean, look, defensive line, I think, is your position of need least right now. And so you're going to need that capital moving forward to keep building this team and keep plugging holes. Not saying that Micah Parsons isn't a fantastic player, arguably one of the best, if not the best defensive players in the NFL, but I'm just not a fan of what you'd have to give up to bring him here versus what your holes are in your defensive line. You don't really have a weak spot in that defensive line right now.
I mean, yeah, like first of all, I agree with you 100% about McLaurin. First of all, how is that guy 31 years old? I feel like he's been in the league for like 4 years. So I think he was one of these guys that got drafted older. Is that what it is?
Drafted older. He was the same draft class as DK Metcalf, who's 27 years old. Yeah. I think McLaurin came out as like a 25 or 26 year old rookie.
I think that's what it was. Because when people said his age, I was like, what? How is this guy 31? I feel like he was just drafted recently.
Yep.
So it's kind of crazy. But I really have no interest in McLaurin for the Patriots, certainly not for a big price. I mean, if you got him at the right price and for a small cost and draft capital, I guess you could think about it. But I agree with you. It sounds like the price wouldn't be worth it. I don't want to make a big investment in him. I also feel like that situation will work out because the Commanders, I mean, they'd have to be crazy to carry this much forward. Like, look at it from the Commander's perspective, Justin. What are they doing? Like, you just made a run to the NFC Championship game. You've got this exciting, dynamic young quarterback, and you're playing games with his best weapon, and he's missing now a huge chunk of camp. You're upsetting something that worked last year, and you're creating like division in your own locker room. It's really not worth it. You've been a losing franchise for three freaking decades, and now you finally strike gold in the draft on a quarterback, and you're messing it up over the wide receiver. I just think it's nuts.
Yeah, I think it's nuts. I think I do think the amount of money that he wants is a little crazy, but I think the Commanders will get it done. I mean, the Commanders have shown that they're adding and they're building this roster. They're not trying to sell it off, right? I mean,
they look at all the aggressive moves they made all offseason to make a Super Bowl contender. Right. And now here you are at the 11th hour, and it's like you're letting it slip through your fingers because of a contract dispute. You just got to pay the guy and get him into camp. Otherwise, you know, your season goes down the toilet.
Exactly. And if there's a time to do that, it's when you got a quarterback on his rookie deal heading into his second year. I mean, you know.
1,000%. And then for Micah Parsons, look, I think Parsons is one of maybe the five best players in the NFL, to be honest with you. And I think if you're going to trade for him, this is what you have working for you. There are very few teams in this league that have the cap room to make a move for Micah Parsons right now without like having to really research them. And the Patriots are one of them. So if you told me I could get Parsons for like a first round pick, I would do it in a second. If you told me the price was three or four first round picks or high draft picks, I would say absolutely not. But I think, you know, if the Cowboys think the market for Micah Parsons is going to be huge, I would say, look at that cap number and who can withstand it. And it really whittles that market down. And the Patriots are one of the only teams that I think would be in that position. I would love to take it. I feel like, and I don't know anything about it, but just from like what you hear in the media, it does feel like the Parsons Cowboys thing is more of an irreparable situation than the McLaurin Commanders thing.
But you know what, to me, it's like, it's very reminiscent of what Jerry Jones did with Dak and with CeeDee Lamb, right? And I, like, you know, I've heard a lot of people saying that Jerry Jones is playing games. He's trying to get, you know, the spotlight in the conversation around the Cowboys, and that eventually by the time the season comes, he's going to pay the guy. I think that'll probably be the case. I agree. If it was just a matter of giving up like a first or maybe even like a first and a second, I totally welcome Micah Parsons. But I saw something the other day that you'd have to be looking at something like a, you know, I think it was maybe Bertrand and Zolak or whoever it was in the sports hub saying, you know, you'd be looking at like two first round picks, a second and Keon White. Like, I don't think I'd
no,
like to
I wouldn't
that.
Do I wouldn't do it for that either.
I wouldn't do it for
two first round picks either.
Yeah.
Especially because it's a position of strength already on this roster.
Exactly.
He's a game changing player, but that's too much. But you know what, Justin, all the bad blood in the world, that goes away pretty quickly if you find the right financial number, right?
Of course.
Like, memories are short when people get paid. Like, you know, a lot can be forgiven when the check is the right size.
Totally. Totally. And look, part of this back and forth is it's really a little bit of peacocking, you know, puffing your chest out on both sides and wanting to show each other that, you know, you're serious and you mean business. I truly think if Jerry Jones ponies up and backs the Brink trucks up for him, Micah Parsons will happily sign and wear a Cowboys uniform.
And all those bad feelings will be like instantly forgotten.
Exactly.
Cowboy for life.
Yep. Totally.
Yeehaw. All right. Let's talk about a little bit about the Cleveland Browns quarterback room, Justin. I think this is interesting. You know, the story of the draft was Shedeur Sanders falling to the fifth round. That's unprecedented. We've never seen a player plummet like that before to the fifth round. We've seen them to the second round, maybe, but never to the fifth round. The story carries into camp now. You have this crowded quarterback room in Cleveland, and now it looks like Sanders is going to be starting the game tomorrow night. I have no interest in the Cleveland Browns rooting wise, but I'm interested in this game. I like Shedeur Sanders. I want to see him. I want to see what he looks like. I think it's an interesting story for a lot of reasons if he's able to overcome the adversity that he had to face. So I'm kind of interested in this Cleveland Browns Panthers preseason game tomorrow because I want to see what Shedeur Sanders looks like.
I couldn't agree more. I really want to see if he takes the opportunity and runs with it. By all accounts, he's looked pretty good in camp. I think the important thing to point out, like with this Browns quarterback situation is, they got like five quarterbacks on the roster right now, but you really don't have to be that good to be the best quarterback in that room. I mean, they're not picking amongst the stars for a starting quarterback. Right. I mean, you got two rookies, you got a 40 or 36 year old Joe Flacco. I think you got Kenny Pickett.
A total washout in Kenny Pickett.
Right. So it's like for Shedeur Sanders to be the starting quarterback.
And they signed Snoop Huntley. Didn't they sign Snoop Huntley?
They did. They brought in Huntley back. So it's like out of those five, to be the starting quarterback in Cleveland, you really only have to be like average to slightly above average. Like you don't have to be a world beater.
Just like, you know, average would be great.
Exactly.
Like, they don't have to be near average to win that job.
Seriously. So
they've got five pieces of reclamation projects. Like just to compare it, to make your point, compare it to the Giants, right? And they've got Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston both on their roster. I don't know if they'll both make it, but those are two like guys that have been like somewhat legit starters recently. Either one of those guys would be the best guy on the Browns far and away.
Totally. So it's like, it's a crowded room, but very easy, I think, to stick out if you're Shedeur Sanders. So I hope he makes the most of the opportunity. I mean, I want Shedeur Sanders to be good. I'm not rooting for him to fail. You know what I mean?
1,000% I'm rooting for Shedeur Sanders. Yeah. I always have been. I mean, I always liked his game. You know, I don't think he's a bad kid. I think he kind of blew the interview process. Maybe it was a lesson for him.
Right.
But I don't think he's a bad kid. We're not talking about some kid that was like a domestic violence thing or you know, something like that. Like totally. This is just a kid that, you know, maybe said a few stupid things, but he's a good kid.
It was an ego check. That's what it was.
An ego check.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about one of my favorite people in the NFL to talk about. And that is Caleb Williams, because I don't know if you saw this viral video going around of, the preseason practice for the Bears scrimmage. I'm not even sure who they were playing against, but there was this great viral clip that went around yesterday and today of like Caleb Williams basically running backwards when he got some pressure up the middle and then like running to the side and then like flinging the ball across his body and throwing a terrible interception.
Yep.
We saw it last year.
We did.
This guy is a franchise killer. He does not have it. I got a statistic for you, okay? The Chicago Bears last year were 32nd in the league in sack rate, meaning they gave up the most sacks per pass attempt of any team in the league, but they were 19th in pressure rate from offensive line.
Yep.
So what does that tell you? Who was responsible for a lot of those sacks? It's Caleb Williams. We saw it in college. We saw it last year. We're seeing it in camp right now. I'm telling you, do not take the cheese on this guy. He is a dud.
He is. And you know what? Like, it's just more par for the course, like for the Bears. I mean, they passed up on Patrick Mahomes to take Mitch Trubisky. They passed up on Jaden Daniels and Drake May to take Caleb Williams. Like, Chicago's really shot themselves in the foot, you know, over the last decade with their opportunities for quarterback. I really, really think that Caleb Williams is going to be a bust. I almost feel like it's a little bit of Trevor Lawrence in the making, where the media, where it's like the media and the hype train really wants him to succeed and live up to his reputation. But by all accounts, the eye test is telling you that this kid doesn't have it. He really doesn't. And so look, I will say this, the position he's in with an offensive mind like Ben Johnson in a totally rebuilt offensive line, in the weapons he has, you know, DJ Moore and all in that whole cast, like, he's got all the pieces there to be successful, but I still don't think it's going to make a difference. I think he's a dud.
He is in a great situation, Justin. This is not, there is nowhere to point the finger for him. You know, an offensive minded coach, or a team that's gone out of their way more than, you tell me, more than any other team that I can think of in recent NFL memory, to surround this guy with weaponry on offense and a stable offensive line and a coach tailored to his strengths. So there's no excuses. None. There's no excuses for Caleb Williams. So I'll say this right now. If the draft, the 2024 draft was done today, I could take Caleb Williams no higher than fourth. Probably might take him fifth, and I might even take him sixth, depending on what we see from J.J. McCarthy. I would take Penix probably ahead of him. I would definitely take May and Daniels ahead of him. I would definitely take Bo Nix ahead of him without a second thought on any one of those three guys. And I can't wait for the narrative this year when Bryce Young comes out and has a good year. And Caleb Williams looks like trash. Because how that trade and the narrative around that trade is going to flip. And we all criticized it, including us at the time. But when Bryce Young, I would take Bryce Young over Caleb Williams right now. No questions asked, no reservations. And when he looks good this year and Caleb Williams looks bad, just you wait, because the narrative is going to change.
Totally. And the thing that I think is worth pointing out about Caleb Williams is, not only does he appear to lack like the talent that everybody, you know, thought he had, right, or was hyping him up to be. But similar to what my big criticism with Trevor Lawrence was when he came out of college, I don't think he's got the head game. I don't think he's got the mental. That's what I think it is. So, you know what I mean? Yeah. So I think this is a guy who lacks the mental toughness and fortitude to be an NFL quarterback. And I think he's not as talented as everybody was hyping him up to be.
I completely agree. I just don't see why he's a special talent. Like, taking the headpiece out of it, which is, you know, I think clearly a huge problem, probably the biggest problem. I don't see what is so special about this guy. He's not big.
Right.
He's small. He's not particularly mobile. His arm is good, but it's not like Josh Allen or Mahomes exceptional.
Exactly.
I just don't see the physical talent that other people, the way they talk about this guy on ESPN, like he is the next Pat Mahomes or Josh Allen. And it's like, I don't make sense of it. It doesn't make sense to me. All right, Justin, one more quick topic for you, then we're going to wrap it up. The Bengals tonight, you're a big Bengals guy.
Yeah.
You're a big Joe Burrow guy.
I am.
Will the Bengals play their stars in this preseason? I think that's a worthy question to think about as you watch this game tonight. They do not play any of their talent historically in the previous preseasons. Is it time to change that approach and fix these slow starts? You look back to that Bengals team last year. If they beat the lowly Patriots in week one, they make the playoffs and they're a tough out.
Totally. I think they were the hottest team in football by the end of the year.
No doubt.
And
one of them,
just to preface this, I have Joe Burrow MVP futures for 2025. I'm expecting a monstrous year out of him, especially now that, you know, he's got Jamar and Higgins on a contract. But I did see Zach Taylor had come out and said that Burrow and the rest of the starters are going to log significant time, at least enough time in the preseason. And it's specifically to address the fact that they have historically started slow the last few years. And so, look, you know, guys like that, you hate to see them potentially risk injury in meaningless games, but I think they've kind of forced their hands. Like with just their history of how slow they've started and how detrimental those slow starts have been, I think you have to risk the injury at this point. I think you got to play these guys.
You do. And Zach Taylor is, I think, coaching for his job this year. Like, I don't think Zach Taylor, if they go 7-10 or 8-9 and miss the playoffs again, I don't think he comes back next year. I think there was a little bit of possibility that last year, and if you weren't dealing with the franchise that employed Marvin Lewis for like 15 years, right? Yeah. The Bengals, who are cheap and don't want to pay for another coach. If you weren't dealing with them, a lot of NFL franchises would have cut the cord with Zach Taylor last year. He's lucky he coaches for the Bengals. I don't think they go back with him another year, though. They're not going to, even the Bengals, I don't think, will be stupid enough to piss away this Burrow Chase Higgins window another season if Taylor gets off to another slow start and they miss the playoffs again by a game or two.
Totally. And look, going back like even 2 years ago, I think we were both on record saying we weren't big fans of Zach Taylor. We didn't really see it. You know, and I know I've heard some people say that they like him. They think he's a good coach. I think he's average at best. I would even say he's probably below average. You know, the Bengals defense hasn't really helped him out that much. But this organization to me is like the epitome of a dumpster fire, because it's like they have totally blown their opportunity. They've traded away and gotten rid of some great defensive talent that they've let walk. You know, guys like Jesse Bates, you can go up and down the Chidobe Awuzie, you can go up and down the list. It's looking like Trey Hendrickson might not be a Bengal this year, who was their lone bright spot on defense.
Right.
It took them forever to bring Shamar Stewart in. And it's like, when you have a guy like Joe Burrow in his prime and you have weapons like they have with Chase Brown and Jamar Chase in T. Higgins, how do you just waste away this opportunity and be as stingy as they are? It blows my mind. I think they're just a total dumpster fire right now.
You have to wonder at some point if Burrow just like is going to throw up his hands and say, like, I can't deal with the dysfunction of this organization anymore. Get me out of here.
And I hope he does, because I truly, you know how high I am on Joe Burrow. I truly think there's, you know, a good 10 franchises in the league right now that you could plop Joe Burrow into, and he's taking them to a Super Bowl and winning a Super Bowl. Like, I truly do believe that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like, if you're Joe Burrow, do you want to be with a team that shoots itself in the foot like every year, one way or another, because they just don't see the big picture on so many things in so many contracts? I mean, you said that the Shamar Stewart thing, that was embarrassing for the Bengals. Like, when does a team go through that with a first round pick in this day and age on this labor agreement where everything is like well defined, like how everyone gets paid?
Right.
Those days are gone, those first round holdout days. Not for the Bengals. They find a way to make it happen. So I think at some point, you know, they got to worry about if Burrow just like has enough with their crap.
Yeah. And you know what? I hope he does. I know they've probably tried to make him happy to a certain extent by locking up his two weapons for the next couple of years. But you know what? If I'm him, I say, look, I can't waste away my career in Cincinnati. I'm a Super Bowl caliber quarterback, and the Bengals just, they're not putting up. They're not doing what it takes right now.
Yeah. And exactly. And it can be easy to forget the Bengals were historically lousy franchise because they just happen to have that number one pick the year Burrow, you know, was available, and it's made them instantly respectable. But let's not forget what this franchise had always been, which is like, you know, the I don't know, Sacramento Kings of the NFL.
Exactly.
It's like, you know, lousy franchise. All right, man, that's all the time we have. Any final thoughts before we wrap it up?
No, I think that does it. But I am interested to see some of these preseason games. Like I said, I'm curious to see who plays their starters. I'm curious. There's a couple guys that, you know, I got my eye on for fantasy. I'm curious to see them get some rub. But you know what? I'm just glad that we got football back, and it's only a matter of time now. We're what, a month, less than a month away from opening night. So
yeah, but a month less than a month. That's right. And you know, It will be recording every week at this point, I think, you know, in covering whatever happens on Friday night and in the next week of camp through these three preseason games. At some point, we're going to bang out a fantasy mock draft. We might save that maybe for the week in between the third game and the 2 week break between the third game and preseason game and the opener. But we're going to get into that. So we're going to have good coverage of everything that's happening down in Foxborough and go through this preseason. We have 4 weeks until it really starts to count.
Yep. Let's do it.
All right, man. Thanks to everyone that listened. Have a great day. Be good. Be healthy. Be well. Be safe. And we'll catch you next time.